Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
So the big question is, are the UK and the EU on the brink of a full-blown vaccine war? Well, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is expected to ask EU leaders to dismiss any proposal to block vaccine supply to the UK. And this Thursday, the EU will meet virtually to consider the matter. And I'm joined now by Andrew Bridgen, Conservative MP, and John O'Brien, Jean Monnet Professor of European Integration at Maynooth University. John, I'm going to start with you because Britain's Defence Secretary yesterday, Ben Wallace, he warned the EU that the world is watching. And he also said that the EU should grow up when it's, talking about blocking vaccine exports to the UK. It's pretty wise advice, isn't it?
Far from it, Claire. I think it was a bit rich for a senior Tory minister to make comments of that kind. After all, the United Kingdom has twice breached or threatened to breach a solemn legal agreement with the European Union, forcing the EU to take legal action only weeks after Brexit happened. The Conservative government has also awarded contract after contract to Tory insiders during the COVID crisis, and with virtually zero parliamentary scrutiny. And Boris Johnson, let's remember, has spent his entire career telling untruths about the EU. When I was growing up, the UK had a global reputation for probity, for good governance, for being a reliable partner. That has plummeted in recent years, and that is the big problem, I think, in the UK-EU relationship. The lack of trust is absolutely profound.
And Andrew, the EU... Britain is listed as a supplier to the EU for AstraZeneca, but so far have sent no vaccine from Britain to the EU.
Well, AstraZeneca set up a factory in Belgium specifically to supply the EU, but unfortunately, because the EU didn't place their order till 3 months after the UK, it's been beset with production problems, which in the contract between the EU and AstraZeneca was highlighted as a risk, which is why it doesn't guarantee supply. It specifies best endeavours. But before we start this interview, I heard the tirade from the learned professor, John. Given his area of research and expertise, would I be correct in surmising that he's funded by the European Union for this research? And in the interest of transparency, would he reply to that so that the listeners know where he's coming from?
John?
Andrew is the genius who back in 2018 suggested that all English people were entitled to Irish passports merely because of the common travel area. I leave it up to listeners to decide who has credibility on these issues.
That sounded like a deflection there, John. Never mind. The EU's position is completely untenable, which is why they've rolled John out as their paid advocate to defend them. The fact that Merkel and Macron both made untrue statements, which are tremendously damaging to Oxford AstraZeneca, a vaccine which was fully funded by the UK taxpayer, all the research, and was being given to the world for £3 a dose, the cost of production, and yet they claimed it was ineffective on over 65s. That's been debunked. They've claimed it gives blood clots. That's been debunked. The coordinated suspension of the use across the European Union of the vaccine, which would save lives, effectively the European Commission playing politics, EU politics, over people's lives, and that is indefensible.
But Andrew, is it not unwise? Is it not unwise, Andrew, to be grabby about vaccines when we know that this problem will not be solved until everybody is vaccinated? And while, you can wave the flag and say we've 27 million people done here, actually, it doesn't solve anybody's problems if the vaccines aren't being shared.
Well, the sooner we're vaccinated, the sooner we can have, we'll still have the production facility. We've got AstraZeneca factory being the production facility in the UK. We've got two of those and a packaging plant. We've got the Novavax vaccine will be coming on stream in a few weeks, manufactured in the UK. And the EU would be very unwise to get into the vaccine nationalism because vital components of the Pfizer vaccine are manufactured in the UK and shipped to Belgium to be incorporated in the Pfizer vaccine manufactured there. Mm-hmm. If we get into a vaccine war, nobody's going to have any vaccines, are they?
And John, can I put that point to you? Because that's what happens when you start issuing threats about stopping the vaccines going from the EU, that you get a counter threat back and you get told you're not going to get your components in down the line to make other vaccines like Pfizer, as Andrew Bridgen outlines. It just ratchets up the whole row and makes it far worse.
Well, Andrew's approach and that of his colleagues all the way through the Brexit debacle was Britain first. Well, I'm sorry to tell Andrew that sovereignty cuts both ways. The EU has to defend the interests of its 27 member states and of its citizens. And if the European Council does take measures later this week to temporarily curb vaccine exports, it will be merely exercising the sovereign right to defend the interests of those states and of its citizens. Sovereignty has to cut both ways. And this is, I think, one of the points that Andrew and his colleagues are simply refusing to accept. Now that the United Kingdom is outside of the European Union, it doesn't have a seat at the table where decisions are taken, and it simply refuses to take responsibility for the catastrophe that they have brought on their own country in recent months.
But do you accept that if the EU carries out this threat to stop the export of vaccines to the UK, that reciprocal action will be taken, which will ultimately hurt the EU?
The United Kingdom is not in a position, in my view, Claire, in the longer term to hurt the EU in any way. Let's remember that we're talking about a bloc of 27 states versus one state, and that also the European Union has asymmetric power here. It has the kind of muscle in the international arena that the UK, as a relatively mid-sized state, simply doesn't have. So if the United Kingdom insists on playing those games, it has to be met on the European Union side, I would say responsibly and maturely, but with the interests of its 27 member states and of its people being defended in exactly the same way as Andrew has argued for in the British case.
Okay, so Andrew, you're not in a position to be threatening the EU with anything, because down the line this will just come back to bite you.
Well, we haven't threatened anybody with anything. It was the EU.
You just did.
Well, it was the EU that, in their knee-jerk reaction, triggered Article 16 of the Northern Ireland Protocol against all their previous statements, and wanted to put a hard border on the island of Ireland for vaccine and vaccine components. The UK doesn't have to hurt the EU. The Commission are doing that all on their own. John says, you know, we're in this lamentable position. We're in a lamentable position where 50% of our adult population have already been vaccinated. We're ahead of the game, and the EU are lagging well behind. And this is absolute sour grapes. They were mismanaged the procurement. They've mismanaged the vaccine rollout, and they've taken the unprecedented steps of damaging, creating more vaccine hesitancy across the EU by rubbishing a very viable and very cheap vaccine, because it was manufactured in the UK from Oxford AstraZeneca. The fact is that the EU are playing vaccine nationalism a long time before this all erupted, because they put all their efforts behind the two French vaccine, the Merck and the Sanofi vaccines, both of which fell over at trials, and that's left them exposed. And now they're trying to play catch up, and they really don't care how slowly we're all vaccinated, as long as no one's vaccinated any faster than the EU and shows them up. But that's the situation we're in, I'm afraid, Claire.
What do you say to that, John? Because it is hard to argue with the vaccine rollout success in the UK.
Well, firstly, you know, the AstraZeneca vaccine is not a UK vaccine. The chain of distribution and supply is a global one, and not just limited even to the European Union. You are right, the European Union is a bit behind, partly because it has taken more time to look at vaccines and their efficacy and authorize them. But I think, in large part, this is down to the way that AstraZeneca has deeply let down the European Union. Remember that in the first quarter of this year, it promised to deliver 100 million vaccines. It has delivered barely 30 million, and even that figure is in doubt. And its communication of its vaccine trials and of what it was doing generally all the way through the last year has been at times disastrous, and it has had real consequences in slowing the distribution of the vaccine in the EU. But I am absolutely certain that the ramping up of vaccine distribution is going to happen within weeks. The European Union, as the New York Times pointed out over the weekend, is about 4 or 5 weeks behind. I would suggest that this is a marathon and not a sprint. We're going to be living with COVID for a long time, and that catch-up will occur.
And Andrew, you're happy that once UK citizens are vaccinated, that the first country that should get any UK excess would be the Republic of Ireland?
Absolutely. You're our neighbour. You're the only country we share a land border with. We've got the common travel area. And we'll have the capacity, once we're fully vaccinated, to get the Republic's population vaccinated in a week.
Andrew Bridgen and John O'Brien, thank you both very much indeed for joining us.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.